Good afternoon, everybody. As the title already says, I'm going to talk about cloud storage and some findings we had. About myself, I'm a PhD student at SPA Research, and we're a research facility focusing on computer security based in Vienna, Austria. So, quick outline. I'm first going to talk about cloud storage in general, then about Dropbox in particular, popular file cloud storage service, and some results we had. Before we start, who in this room is actively using Dropbox? Quite a few. So cloud storage is an extremely competitive market at the moment. There are hundreds of services out there trying to compete for customers, and all varying in their features they offer, their security, and so forth. Every major operating system vendor is pushing data to the cloud, so this is an ongoing field. There are a lot of simple systems out there that rely on well-known, well-understood protocols like FTP or WebDAV, so they have not many features. You just can put your data there and retrieve it at a later time. But there are also more complex systems that offer features like Delta Syncs, where only the information changed in your files is pushed to the cloud, or folder sharing, push notifications. So you can have two folders with pictures, one for your family, one for your friends, where you put different pictures in it. And as soon as you put the pictures in there, they're synced to all the shared participants and written to their hard disk. Some more complex system include Voila, SpiderOak, Dropbox. They offer a lot of features to the user. Most of them are usable for free. And depending on the threat model the user has, he or she is forced with an important decision. Like, is it a threat for the user if the data is not encrypted in the cloud? Or is it of importance where the data resides? For example, by legislation, is it of importance if it's in the same country, or can the data be stored everywhere and move freely around the world? An important feature for all the cloud storage things is data deduplication. At the server side, if the data is not encrypted, if it can simply save a lot of storage space. So instead of storing the latest Britney Spears album twice on the server, you just need to only save it once, except for redundancy, of course, but you only store one copy, even if hundreds and thousands of users have this same copy. At the client side, data deduplication offers the benefit of saving data communication and reducing the communication overhead. So instead of sending the Britney Spears album to the cloud before being able to using it, it's somehow hashed or some digest is calculated and shown to the server to see if it's already stored on the cloud, which is beneficial for everyone, right? You can save communication cost and storage space. As it turns out, not so much. So this is a picture of an efficient cloud architecture using data client-side data deduplication. You add a file to your cloud folder. It's hashed, and the hash is sent to the cloud. In the cloud, it is checked if the file is already there, if some other user has already stored it, or if the same user has stored it at the previous point in time. And if so, it's the file is not uploaded. It's just linked, and the data is pushed to all the shared folders and so forth. So our contributions are, we outlined in three attacks in the paper and show their feasibility on Dropbox. Dropbox itself is a quite popular service. It's wonderful. It uses the Amazon S3 storage system to save all the data. Data is deduplicated at the client side using SHA-256, and the data is encrypted at the server, which is Amazon. It has reportedly 25 million users and stores more than 100 billion files. and 1 million files are added every 5 minutes. Those are numbers from TechCrunch. So the first attack relies on the fact that the client is trusted for hash computation. Every time you add a file, it's hashed, and the hash is transmitted to Dropbox. Or to point out, this attack isn't specific to Dropbox. It's any cloud storage service that uses data duplication on the client side with any form of hashing can be attacked with this attack. So if the hash calculation can be manipulated, the cloud storage operator can be tricked into believing that the user owns a file that, in fact, he has not. So we tried this attack. It resulted in unauthorized file access. The only thing you need to know was the hash value of the file. And then you could download the file directly from the storage service. The other nice thing about this attack, it's completely undetectable as well for the victim as to the cloud storage operator, because the victim is not involved in any way. You just need to know the hash value. You can either get it by social engineering, you can get it with a malware, you can, whatever you can think of. You just need to know the hash value, and it's not specific to the victim. And the cloud storage operator only sees that you add a file that happens to be already on the server. That's part of the regular uploading process, so there's nothing suspicious over there. In the Dropbox case, we modified a wrapper library, which is used for hash calculation, and shipped with the Dropbox client. And just replace the hash value with one of our choice. The second attack is the stolen host ID attack. This has been independently discovered by Derek Newton in April 2011 and has been in the media, I guess. In fact, Dropbox uses something called a host ID to link a particular account with a user computer. So the credentials are only needed to enter once. So when the user signs up, he enters the credentials after installing the software. The host ID is generated and used for authentication from that point on. This host ID is stored in the clear, or used to be stored in the clear. It's 128-bit in length. And it's arguably a security issue, because if you can read 128-bit from an arbitrary position at the hard drive of the victim, you're owned anyway. But still, there are certain scenarios where you can use this. For example, data exfiltration can be a point where you have a small office mail server which happens to run Dropbox as well as the mail server. Then you could just copy with a malware attack all the emails to Dropbox, delete them right afterwards, so it's very stealth, and then just exfiltrate the host ID to download all of the data. On the good side, this can be easily detected by the cloud storage service. You just need to monitor the host ID activity. If it's changing the IP address, for example, this might be VPN issue, but if it changes other vital parts of the computer hardware, this can be detected because the host ID is specific to the computer. The third attack we discovered is the direct up and download attack. We discovered that everything is sent with simple HTTPS requests, like for storage and for retrieval. The only information needed for that request is the SHA-256 value of that specific chunk or that file and a valid host ID. It doesn't necessarily need to be the host ID from the computer you're running or that is linked to your account. Just any valid host ID used to be sufficient to download arbitrary data. At the back end, there is no check if the chunk is linked with that particular account. It's easily exploitable. And it has the same effect as the hash manipulation attack, but it's less stealthy. So while the hash manipulation attack is undetectable, you could detect that some user is downloading a file or a chunk that he's not supposed to have access to. Another feature of this attack is that you could upload data to either your Dropbox account or other people's Dropbox account if you know the host ID, and you could upload without linking. Again, it's just an HTTPS request. You submit the host ID and the SHA-256, not the value, of course, but the data of the chunk. Upload it, it gets stored in the Amazon cloud, and you could retrieve it later on. The nice thing about this is it doesn't count to your storage quota because it's not linked to your account. If you go to your to the website and see all the files that are in your account, it doesn't show up, but it's still retrievable with the HTTPS request. And of course, you can, if the host ID of other people's Dropbox is known, you could push data onto their computer, which might eventually point out, might be very effective in a combination with an exploit for a thumbnail generation, for example. You just prepare a malicious JPEG, upload it to other people, and as soon as they open the folder and the preview is generated, the user is on the computer of the victim is under your control. Of course, this can be detected by the operator as well. There should not be any chunks without links, so some kind of garbage control need to be in place to detect if data is hidden using this method. So for evaluation, we measured the time until data gets deleted. Short note, Dropbox uses two different accounts, a pro account where you pay for your data and a free account with limited storage. The free account allows you to undelete data or to recover data up to 30 days. The pro account has no restriction in this way. And we try to evaluate if there's any difference in the backend. So we uploaded data, deleted it right afterwards. We made sure that it's random data, that no other user accidentally uploads, and tried how long, evaluated how long the data is stored at Dropbox. So for the hidden upload, we found something at least 4 weeks, 100% of the chunks we uploaded were retrievable. This number then diminished over time, but not with a specific pattern. But if we uploaded the files with a regular free account, the undelete was more than 6 months possible. So if you think of an attacker sitting at home and hiding data in the cloud, he could use a free account, upload data, delete it right afterwards, and then wait 30 days, and then it doesn't show up anymore in the website, and maybe he cannot be linked to the data. For this evaluation, we used the HTTPS attack. So we uploaded the data with the HTTPS interface because stealthiness was not an issue, and it was more straightforward to implement. The hash manipulation attack would have been equally suitable, but would have been a bit more complex. But still, the effects would have been the same. For a second evaluation part, we wanted to assess what kind of popular files are stored on Dropbox. We downloaded from popular file sharing network Pirate Bay the top 100 torrent files from a specific date. We then downloaded all the copyright-free content. Because we're from Austria, downloading BitTorrents is illegal as well, kind of. We downloaded all the stuff that has no copyright, like checksum files, subtitle files, information files made by the release group, and checked if those are on Dropbox, because if they are on Dropbox, the files themselves, the movies, the series, the games, are very likely to be as well. From those 100 torrents, we extracted 360-something files, And from those, 79% were retrievable from Dropbox. 20% of the torrents were less than 24 hours in age, so they were recent torrents. And this led us to the conclusion that it is used for storing files from Pirate Bay, but it's hard to interpret on a large scale. The only fact that can be driven from this experiment is that at least one of the seeders from the torrents uses Dropbox. 470,000, maybe it might even be the fact that it's a single user that has a script running to download, to harvest Pirate Bay top 100 files, might be the case. We cannot say which users it were. The only thing we could say is that some user at some point in time stored this data on Dropbox. So for countermeasures, this is nothing that's desirable for the user. The most easiest countermeasure would be to abandon data deduplication in the first place. But this is very costly because every file needs to be sent to the cloud. Recently, there has been discussions on data possession proofs for cloud storage, for example, published at CCS 2007. But they are not really suitable because they work in a different context. They want to assess, I, as a user, upload data to the cloud, and I want to test the cloud in a later point in time if they still store the data. This is not possible for a client side. Another recent paper, which is currently under submission by Harnik et al., they use proof of ownage. They build a Merkle hash tree over the files, and the server can then challenge the client to ask for a kind of proof that he's in possession of the file. But our solution is much more simpler and easier to implement. It's an interactive challenge response protocol because the starting point for this is that the client and the server, they all are in the possession of the same file. The only thing the server wants to verify is that the client really is in possession of the file and not just pretending to be. So both parties already own the file in the perfect case. And this opens a lot of possible challenges. You could either hash a subset, you could XOR certain bytes with varying offset, you could apply multiple rounds of challenge response before the file is linked to the account of the specific user. And the second benefit is this is pre-computable by the server. So for everything, every challenge can be implemented in a challenge set and then is as simple as a database lookup. There's no big overhead on this side. The drawbacks of this approach is, of course, this is not a real proof. Challenges can be forwarded. So if you have two adversaries collaborating and one is in possession of the file and wants to use the cloud storage service to simply transmit it faster to the second adversary, this is not a proof. All the challenges can be forwarded to entities already in possession of the file and then answered without problem. But it makes hash manipulation attacks detectable. For example, if the response time is tremendously larger than usually, then there's something fishy going on and the client might be requested to simply re-enter the credentials just to be sure. So for the timeline, we started working on this in the beginning, in the first half of 2010. We had the first results in summer 2010. The first paper draft was in November 2010, and Dropbox was notified via national cert at the same time. However, now we have August 2011, so it took some time to get this paper published. Independent results and kudos to Danny Harnik, Benny Pinkers et al. From IBM Haifa. They published the theoretical background of this attack independently in December 2010 at IEEE Privacy, Security and Privacy magazine. Derek Newton discovered the stolen host ID attack. Chris Shahoyan and Ashkan Soltani, they blocked about data leakage or information leakage from client-side data duplication, and there have been various other tools. So Dropbox reacted as soon as we made our paper public. They fixed the HTTPS interface, so it's not possible anymore to upload and download arbitrary data. The host ID is now encrypted on disk, and upon recently, we have not verified it, but all the client-side data deduplication is abandoned, so every file is sent to Dropbox. To conclude, we showed the hash manipulation attack. It is completely undetectable for a victim and the operator, and is applicable to all the services. We just happened to show it in Dropbox, and that some stronger forms of client-side data possession proofs are needed if you want to use client-side data deduplication. So with it, I'm finished, and thank you for your time.
Your attack number one, did you notice there's also an Oracle attack? If you have a form that's complete except for, say, your manager's salary, you can choose a value of the salary, and you can choose, try all the values of the salary, and if it doesn't force you to upload the form, then you've guessed the correct one.
Yes, yes, but that's not as stealthy as the other attacks. You would either need to brute force 128-bit host ID, or SHA-256 values to download any file or to access any information. So
no, I mean with client-side deduplicating, wouldn't it not make you upload the form if you had the right value and it already had a copy?
Yeah, of course. If you know the answer to the challenges, then of course it's you can detect it by measuring the differences to normal behavior. If you're an adversary that's constantly, it's not the real solution, because the real solution is data just to upload any file, but it can be used to detect.
An unexpected side effect of using a standard hash to store these values is, of course, that there's a database of forbidden content or protected content.
Yes.
They can be told to disclose all their customers who have it.
Yes.
Or who've tried to upload it.
Fun fact, a colleague of mine, Manuel, he implemented a reverse hash database by uploading word lists, and so at a later point in time, he could just check if it's stored there and then just reverse the hash function.
Okay, as you point out correctly, this is not the only service that uses this kind of client-side deduplicating. There's a service called Connected Iron Mountain Backup now, which used a similar sort of thing, and many enterprises use it for backup, and it has a similar problem with using standard hashes and client-side deduping.
Yeah.
So if you use this in your enterprise, you might want to watch out for that.
So on your slide entitled, I think, Countermeasures, you had some... the next one. Yeah, that's the one, challenge response. So you have some possible challenges there. Isn't the crypto correct thing to send a MAC key and just challenge them to give you the MAC on the data? Like, these things seem really poor man's.
Yeah, absolutely. Yeah. Would be, it's just, those are, for a million files every 5 seconds, probably easier to, faster to implement. But of course, MAC would be the correct answer.
Right. MACs are pretty fast, right?
Yeah.
They can be. Okay. Any other questions? Oh, have one.
So did you actually check that it verified the hash at the server side?
Yes, they do. So okay. If a client is requested to upload a file, it's recalculated at the server side, yes.
Because, of course, you could you could determine the outcome of a subsequent upload by front-running the
first backup
of the content.
Probably there are services that are vulnerable to that. Yeah.